Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Friday, July 22nd, 2022 edition of On Iowa Politics. And who boy, it's a good one. We are chock full of podcasty goodness this week. We'll be discussing Governor Reynolds on red flag laws, some big votes in the U.S. House, and all kinds of new Iowa poll results. Hello, everyone. I'm Aaron Murphy, the Des Moines Bureau Chief for the Gazette in Cedar Rapids. And one of these weeks, I'll make it through an intro without fumbling over my tongue. With me today are Gazette Deputy Bureau Chief Tom Barton. Good morning, Tom.
Good morning.
Lee Des Moines Bureau Chief Caleb McCullough. Good morning, Caleb.
Good morning.
Sarah Watson of the Quad City Times is here. Good morning, Sarah.
Good morning.
Jared McNett of the Sioux City Journal as well. Good morning, Jared.
I always run toward the danger, Aaron.
Gazette opinion editor Todd Dorman is here. Good morning, Todd.
Good morning.
All right. First up this week, we want to go over something real quick that we wanted to last week, but our esteemed colleague Tom Barton was unavailable for last week's podcast. But Tom wrote a story about the incentives that are being offered by the federal government that encourage the state to enact so-called red flag laws as a means to help prevent gun violence. Tom, I'll let you take it from here. Tell us more about your story, and in particular, what Governor Reynolds had to say about the topic.
Yeah, so in a state where lawmakers have loosened gun restrictions for several years, incentives are coming from the federal government to enact the so-called red flag laws that would allow groups to petition a court to temporarily confiscate a firearm from a person who's deemed a threat to themselves or others. The federal gun control legislation passed in June included funding for states to enact those laws. Governor Kim Reynolds didn't rule out the state passing a red flag law next year, but she questioned their effectiveness. Gun safety advocates say that these measures are a proven way to intervene before gun violence, such as a gun suicide or a mass shooting, takes more lives. Some gun rights activists contend that the measures instead give courts broad discretion to confiscate firearms without due process. National polling suggests strong majorities of Americans from across the aisle, from across the political spectrum, support these extreme risk laws. 19 states and the District of Columbia have adopted them in the last few years, and social science suggests that they work most strikingly in preventing gun suicide. Reynolds, at a news conference last week, however, said that Illinois' red flag law failed to prevent a man there with a known pattern of concerning behavior from shooting dozens of people at a July 4th parade in Highland Park, Illinois. Reynolds said, quote, "No matter how many Iowans or rules you have on the books, if somebody has evil in the heart, you can't handle that," end quote. Lawmakers, lawyers, doctors in Illinois say that there may not have been enough public awareness of the state's red flag law at the time law enforcement came into contact with the person who police said confessed to that Highland Park shooting. The recent federal legislation includes money for public awareness campaigns and more training for police. Reynolds said that the issue of gun violence needs to be addressed holistically while preserving lawful gun owners' rights to bear arms under the Second Amendment. She said that, quote, "there's not one single answer, but that we'll take a look at everything, but it's a balance in how we move forward."
Yeah. So if you missed it, Tom did a really good job. It's a really comprehensive story that got at the issue, not just from the he said, she said angle, but he talked to experts in their fields and did a really good job explaining it. So if you missed it, punch up Tom's name and red flag laws in your Google machine and check out that story. It's an interesting kind of position now that states are in as people look for ways to tackle or address gun violence. And obviously, as Tom noted, this gets into the whole Second Amendment and gun rights realm. Todd, we have a lot of ground to cover this week, so I don't want to belabor this too much. But before we move on, give me your quick odds on Iowa's Republican majority legislature passing a red flag law here, even with those federal incentives.
Well, do you believe in miracles? No.
Oh, that's much more sad than I remember Al Michaels saying it.
Right. Yeah. There's about the same chance of, you know, Iowa winning the national championship in football? Is the Iowa legislature passing red flag laws or any restriction on firearms? So the governor didn't seem enthusiastic as Tom reported. And yeah, I would definitely doubt that it has much of a chance.
And it's worth noting that Iowa Republican state lawmakers are going kind of in the opposite direction, that there will be an item on the ballot in November for an amendment to the state constitution that would, you know, essentially enshrine gun rights and the Second Amendment into the state constitution and say that, you know, any restrictions on any Iowan Second Amendment right would be subject to strict scrutiny, you know, which is a pretty high legal bar to pass. And so you have a lot of gun safety advocates saying that should that pass, should Iowa voters approve that amendment to the state constitution, that it would make enacting, you know, what they deem it to be common sense, you know, gun safety reforms, regulations, including red flag laws, that it would make that almost impossible.
Yep, that's such a great point, Tom. Thanks for remembering that, because that's absolutely right. If that proposed constitutional amendment passes, then from what we've been told by legal experts is something like a red flag law would be useless because it would be deemed unconstitutional in all likelihood.
My dad was a purveyor of dark humor, and he used to say that, you know, if every American were required to carry a shotgun, there'd be almost no crime, which I said, there'd be a lot more people that died of shotgun blasts, but I couldn't persuade him. I think a law like that is more likely in Iowa than a red flag law, maybe a requirement that we all carry a shooting iron.
Required carry. Go from permitless to required. All right. Well, plenty to watch for front in the coming weeks and months. Get back to the present day now. It was an active and, dare I say, even big week in the U.S. House, where legislation moved on marriage equality and access to contraception. The bills were presented by a majority U.S. House Democrats and were essentially written in response to the recent U.S. Supreme Court ruling that overturned Roe versus Wade. That ruling effectively ended the federal right for a pregnant person to have an abortion. And with that ruling in mind, federal Democrats have now moved these bills to offer protections to what they view as other rights, including for same-sex marriages and, as you said, access to contraception. So let's talk about those each here. Caleb, you wrote about the marriage equality vote, and it wasn't a straight Democrat-Republican split in the Iowa delegation, was it? Tell us how folks voted and what they had to say about the bill.
No, so two Republicans out of three in Iowa's delegation joined the anti-marriage equality vote. So, yeah, I think it's going to be interesting to see how that falls if it does come up in the Senate.
Yeah, which you have to believe it will. Jared, did Randy Feenstra ever issue a statement on that bill? Oh, we can't. Are you Zoom muted, Jared?
Yeah, so I haven't seen anything from his office, at least through this morning, okay, with regard to his vote. But I would mention with Feenstra, going all the way back to his first term in the Iowa Senate in 2011, he sponsored a joint resolution which basically proposed an amendment to the state constitution saying that marriage is between one man and one woman and that no other legal union should be valid or recognized in the state. That didn't go anywhere in that session, but it kind of showed where Feenstra stands on this and has continued to stand as it comes to marriage.
Yeah, that one man, one woman amendment was heartbreaking to the one man, one lawnmower marriages that Steve King warned us all about way back when it was a threat to those beautiful unions. Tom, you wrote about the contraception bill. So this issue had a little wrinkle in that Republicans didn't like the Democrats' bill. So in Iowa, a couple of them wrote their own. Tell us about that.
Yeah, so yesterday the House passed a bill largely along party lines that would establish a right to contraception nationwide. House Democrats say the legislation would defend decades-long precedent and ensure access to contraceptives in the face of the Supreme Court decision overturning a fundamental right to an abortion. And in his opinion overturning Roe last month, Justice Clarence Thomas wrote that the court should now review other precedents. He mentioned rulings that affirmed rights to same-sex marriage and same-sex relationships, which he's covered, but he also referenced married couples' use of contraceptions, a ruling from 1965. Iowa's Republican U.S. House members voted against the bill. Republicans said that the bill went too far, that it would lead to more abortions, which supporters deny, and would allow the use of drugs not yet fully approved by the FDA, and that it would force healthcare providers to offer contraceptives, even if that contradicted their religious beliefs. So Representatives Ashley Hinton and Marionette Miller Meeks instead introduced a separate bill that would allow adult women to access over-the-counter birth control pills that have been approved by the FDA as safe and effective, and would require the FDA to give priority review for over-the-counter access to those routine use oral contraceptives, again, that the agency has already deemed as safe and effective, and that would be for women ages 18 and older. House Democrats blocked consideration of the bill. You know, over-the-counter birth control pills are available worldwide, but are available in the U.S. only with a prescription. In contrast, emergency contraceptives, including Plan B, are already available over-the-counter. Hinton, though, emphasized that her bill pertains only to access to FDA-approved routine-use birth control pills over-the-counter, not emergency contraceptives. Hinton said that a majority of women support making birth control available over the counter without a prescription, and that women should be able to access their preferred birth control method conveniently, and that this was particularly important for women in rural areas who may have to drive an hour or more to see their doctor. Iowa Democrats, including State Senator Liz Mathis, who's running to challenge Hinton in the November election for Iowa's second congressional district seat, argue that it will not matter if birth control is available over the counter if it's not available in the first place. And they note that several states have already restricted access to contraception by cutting off public funding for it, defining abortion broadly enough to include contraception, and allowing healthcare providers to refuse to provide services related to contraception based on their personal beliefs. It got sent to the Senate. It's not clear whether, Democrats' Right to Contraception Act will pass in the evenly divided Senate, where they'll need at least 10 GOP votes to defeat a filibuster. Iowa Republican U.S. Senator Joni Ernst told the Washington Post that she feels strongly about making sure women have contraception. Ernst introduced legislation in 2019 similar to Hinton's bill that would expand access to over-the-counter contraception without a prescription and allow for people to pay for it with their health savings account. Ernst, though, was noncommittal about voting for federal protections for contraceptions, saying perhaps it should be up to the states. U.S. Senator Chuck Grassley said that he was not aware of any meaningful effort to challenge access to contraception, which he said has been widely available for decades. He noted that most insurance plans cover it as well, but went on to say that he supports access to contraception and doesn't think that the government should further restrict it.
Yeah, and that's a good point. To look ahead on the similarly on the marriage equality bill, that's kind of the discussion now too. Is are there 10 votes from the Republican side in the Senate to get it past the filibuster? That's kind of the ongoing debate and calculus being figured out right now. And as of the last story I read anyways, that they were maybe close, but not quite sure if they're at 60 yet. So it'll be interesting to see if either of those make it to a Senate a floor vote. Real quick, Todd, I'm going to put you on the spot here. I didn't script this, but as we're talking through this, I remember that one of the criticisms, complaints, grumbles from House Democrats is that, House Republicans is that these are not, they're just political token bills, that they're not legitimate legislative efforts. What's your view from your seat in the cheap seats? Are Democrats legitimately trying to enshrine some protections in law here, or is this just a way to get some Republicans on record in an election year?
Well, it's both. I mean, I do think Democrats want to get these rights, you know, into statute and offer some protections to some constituencies that, you know, make up a significant part of their party. And also, yeah, they want to contrast with Republicans and show that, you know, most GOP House members are not supportive of these rights, or at least are unwilling to, you know, put them into law. You know, some of them argue that these are already precedents and they're well established, but you know,
sounds familiar.
Yeah, we just saw a well-established precedent, you know, addressing the right to privacy thrown out. These also rest on those, you know, 14th Amendment privacy due process type arguments. So, yeah, I think the fears are legitimate that the court could turn on some of these things and that they need to be put into the law. And yeah, both. It's both a, you know, a way to get Republicans on the record, and also to do something that their constituents expect. I mean, there's a lot of grumbling that the Democrats haven't done enough in the wake of the Dobbs ruling to sort of shore up these rights, and this is a way to show that they're at least giving it a shot.
Yeah, I'm glad you said that, Todd, because I've had that thought a few times in recent days and weeks that I don't know how anybody anywhere anymore can say, well, I don't think that they will ever ... whatever that is, fill in the blank. Clearly, precedence is not a thing anymore. And I can understand at least, you know, the idea that some things may need an extra layer of protection if folks feel that they require and can provide. So we'll keep an eye on that and see if that comes up in the Senate. And obviously then, we'll have, our senators here, Chuck Grassley and Joni Ernst, having to deal more directly with those issues. Moving on, to the main event now, here we go, political reporters, we've got polling. Last weekend, we got the first Mediacom Des Moines Register Iowa poll of the 2022 general election season. Unfortunately, the poll did not really survey the state's most competitive races at the congressional level. They just asked the generic ballot question instead. But we did get our first Iowa poll look at the campaigns for governor and U.S. Senate. In the Senate campaign, Republican incumbent Chuck Grassley appears to have a closer race than he's used to, at least historically. He leads Democratic challenger Mike Franken by 8 percentage points. So Jared, how is the Franken campaign view this? Is this good news for Mike Franken that he's not down by 20 plus points like so many Grassley challengers of the past? Or is it still bad news for Mike Franken because he's still down 8 points, which may be a steep hill to climb for the rest of this year?
Well, you know, there was a Change Research poll all the way back in April that showed Franken, trailing Grassley by 3 points. So in that respect, this is less favorable and a tapering off from that. But if you're a Franken fan, a Franken yak, if you will, there are some positives to focus on in the poll. 7% of likely voters say they would vote for someone else. 2% say they would not vote, and 5% said that they're unsure. So as long as my math is not completely atrocious, that's 14%. And you know, you get a little more than half of those people to come over to your side, and it's essentially a jump ball from there. And, you know, just as a historical note, it is interesting that the margin in the poll right now is 8%, because that's still the narrowest margin that Grassley has won by in a Senate race, and that was his first one, you know, all the way back in 1980 against John Culver. So yeah, this is a little bit of a different terrain for Grassley, and you know, not the greatest terrain necessarily for Franken's campaign, because 8% is a sizable number, but it's not an insurmountable one as long as you're in single digits.
There you go. I think that's a good way to put it, and it'll just be interesting to me because it's like you said, it's not 20; it's all the way down to 8. So that's a good thing for the Franken campaign. But that last 8 points, I'm sure, barring some kind of seismic shift in the landscape, will be difficult. And as we always talk about, the national landscape seems to favor Republicans this year. So Franken may be swimming against those headwinds as well. In the governor's race, things are not quite so compelling, at least not for the moment. Republican incumbent Governor Kim Reynolds leads Democratic challenger Deidre DeGeer in the Iowa poll by 17 percentage points. That's a big one, obviously. If there's a silver lining for the DeGeer campaign, maybe it's that Reynolds is only at 48%, so that's not a gigantic number by any means. And at 31%, maybe there's room for DeGeer's support to grow the more that she increases her name recognition. But man, still, 17 points, that's a lot, to say the least. Sarah, how does DeGeer make up that ground?
Yeah, I think, like you said, the 17 points is certainly a monumental, just a huge hill to climb. And it's a, you know, it's a decline for the DeGeer campaign from the previous Iowa poll, where they were separated by 8 points, which granted didn't include options for other candidates other than the two major parties. But we see Reynolds' support growing from the previous Iowa poll, and we're but in terms of how she makes up that ground, if she can, I really honestly think she probably needs some better headwinds from the national political landscape. If obviously President Biden right now is very unpopular, and so, you know, the president of her party being unpopular definitely doesn't help her a lot. So, but you know, whether or not her strategy works, she seems to be focusing a lot on healthcare and rural issues, some of those basic, staying away from those really controversial issues. So we'll see how it turns out.
Yeah. And to your point, you know, if Mike Franken all of a sudden, if that race becomes competitive, like legitimately competitive, if that number shrinks in future polling, then maybe that picks up DeGeer a little bit as well. Todd, give me your quick thoughts on both those poll results. What does that 8-point margin in the Senate race say to you? And is 17-point deficit, is that a hopeless cause for DeGeer?
Well, I think the 8-point lead for Grassley means the race is competitive. That's a good size lead, but it's also, as has been mentioned, that Grassley generally does a lot better against his Democratic opponents. And he's below 50%, which is not good news for a long-term incumbent who's well-known. That suggests maybe there are some doubts. As for DeGeer, I mean, her biggest problem was, you know, the campaign finance numbers came out this week, and her fundraising still is not great. She's not getting money from the typical traditional big money Democratic donors. The ISCA hasn't given her any money yet. So it takes resources to get out there and to be more aggressive and to be more visible and to get that name recognition up. And so far, Democrats, at least the donor class, are sort of sleepwalking through this election and have decided not to invest in her campaign, which, you know, the consequences of another Reynolds term couldn't be more sharp for Democrats, but yet they seem pretty complacent. So if she could get in, get some cash and get out there, and I mean, yeah, it's July. No campaign is won in July. So she still, you know, has a chance, but yeah, it's a big deficit, and the governor is still, you know, heavily favored to win.
All right, so let's finish this up and go around the horn with this last one and talk about the congressional races. Like I said, the Iowa poll didn't survey those congressional races. They just asked the generic ballot question, and just for bookkeeping's sake, the incumbent party was the leader in all four districts. But we did get some internal polling this week in each of the first three districts, which are Iowa's most competitive. And the results are noteworthy, again, if you have faith in the accuracy of those internal polls. And so the results, and these were three separate polls by three separate pollsters, showed the second and third district races literally tied and the first district candidates divided by a single solitary percentage point. So all obviously really, really close. Really interesting. So let's go around the horn here. A district per person. Do we believe that these campaigns are that close? Do we believe in this polling? Give me rapid fire. Give me a yes or no, and then a succinct thought. Ready? All right. Here we go. Sarah, is it believable that the new first district race between Republican incumbent Marionette Miller Meeks and Democratic challenger Christina Bohannon is virtually tied, just 1 point between them?
Yes, but I would also note that there were 22% of undecided voters. I think there's not a lot of name recognition right now, at least among some voters with Christina Bohannon, perhaps.
That is a big undecided slice of the pie, even this early in the season. All right. Thank you, Sarah. Tom, is it believable that the new second district race between Republican incumbent Ashley Hinson and Democratic challenger Liz Mathis is literally tied?
Yes, I think it's believable. I think it's believable this could be a close and highly contested race. It's a swing district where the seat has switched parties, I think, for the last five elections. I would place this caveat. The nonpartisan election forecaster Cook Political Report lists the race among its list of competitive races for the midterm elections, though it gives the advantage to Hinson, rating it a likely Republican district, meaning the seat is not considered competitive at this point, but there's the potential to become so, and I think that that's probably fair.
There you go. That's a good note. And I think the first district is rated the same way, if I remember right, the Miller Meeks.
Correct.
Yeah. All right. Good, Tom. Thank you. Caleb, is it believable that the new third district race between Democratic incumbent Cindy Axne and Republican challenger Zach Nunn is literally tied?
Yes. This one seems like the closest of the three, and this kind of just kind of backs that up. Both parties, I mean, I think the Republican Party especially are putting a huge spotlight on this district. I think the Republicans think they can win it back, but they know it's going to be tough. Democrats obviously know the same thing. So, both of these, you know, past pollings will tell you that there's not a clear advantage here.
Yeah, I think we would have been surprised if this one hadn't been close, if not tied.
Yes.
All right. Jared, being our fourth district guy, how lonely do you feel in this discussion?
Cue up some music by Akon, Aaron, because I am Mr. Lonely over here. we can't get pollsters to pay us any attention at all. And really, you know, it's a dent to all of our self-worth.
Oh man. All right, Todd, we'll let you take us home here. Looking at the whole batch, broadly speaking, do you think these campaigns are all as close as those internal polls suggest?
Yeah, I think they're close. I don't know that, you know, statistical ties and stuff, there may be a little more room in some of these districts as far as percentages, but yeah, I mean, I believe that's the case. But I mean, and it's easy to believe this considering all the things we've had to believe in the last couple of years. This is like one of the least implausible things I've been asked to believe. So I
that's such a great point.
I think I'll just go ahead and believe it.
Yeah. Oh, and on that note, we wrap up this edition of On Iowa Politics. We hope you enjoyed it. If you did, tell your friends. And remember, you can subscribe to us on any number of streaming audio services, including iTunes, Spotify, and Amazon, and a host of others. If you have any suggestions for topics to discuss or you just want to reach out, you can email us at podcasts@thegazette.com. And now that you've listened to the On Iowa Politics podcast, make sure you're also subscribed to the On Iowa Politics newsletter, where every morning in your inbox, you'll get all the latest politics and government coverage from our team. You can subscribe to that On Iowa Politics newsletter at thegazette.com. And don't forget that the work of everyone you heard here today can be found on the pages and websites of the Quad City Times, Waterloo Cedar Falls Courier, Sioux City Journal, Mason City Globe Gazette, Muscatine Journal, Council Bluffs Daily Nonpareil, and the Cedar Rapids Gazette. Please give us those clicks, people. The Olympics will play us out this week. If you know an Iowa band or musician who should be featured on the podcast, please send us a sound file. For Tom, Caleb, Jared, Sarah, Todd, and our producer, Steven, I'm Aaron Murphy. Thanks for listening.
Get a daily update from the Gazette with our daily news podcast. Add it to your podcast player or your Alexa-friendly device to get a bite-sized local news update each day. Check it out at thegazette.com/podcasts.